I chose this title sometime in August to appear in September's magazine. So it's a coincidence that I'm speaking on this subject so close to the events of last Wednesday. Our former minister, Bill Darlison, always said there's no such thing as coincidence, so is there? And this church is not a political organization. We don't become involved in particular politics, but we do involve ourselves in the promotion of justice, peace, equality, and human rights. And the title Civil Disobedience comes from a book of that title written by someone called Henry David Thoreau. Thoreau was a founding member of what's called the Transcendental Club. And the Transcendental Club was formed by a group of intellectuals based around Boston at the beginning of the 19th century. They met to discuss ideas about religion, society, education, and they went on to experiment with different ways of living. You know, they set up communes and tried to live like that for a while. They met to discuss ideas about religion, society. Many of them were from Unitarian backgrounds, and a number of them were ordained ministers in the Unitarian tradition. But that tradition was only evolving at the time, and many people strongly disagreed with Unitarian beliefs. They emerged from a Calvinistic background, and when they began to talk about the unity of God rather than Trinity, they were very despised often. And their discussions about religion were not about what should be and shouldn't be religious orthodoxy. They saw religion as being a pathway to living the best possible life. They wanted their new country to be a place that valued independence and justice for every citizen. The club held public lectures and they published articles exploring their views. One of the most influential members was Henry David Thoreau. Thoreau was born in 1817 and he died at the age of 44 just during the American Civil War. And in his short life, he achieved an amazing amount. He's best remembered for his books, Walden and Civil Disobedience. Walden is an account of 22 months Thoreau spent living in a cabin at Walden Pond. And Walden Pond wasn't some very remote place. It was a few miles outside of town. But he built his own cabin in the woods with his hands and kept a note of how much everything cost. And he lived there for 22 months. He tread softly on the earth. And his watchwords for his life from that time onwards were simplify, simplify, simplify. Thoreau asked, what is the use of a house if you haven't got a tolerable planet to put it on? While at Walden, he became a renowned naturalist, and he did that without ever trapping or killing an animal. He simply lived among the creatures and watched them. His book, Civil Disobedience, was published in the 1850s. America at that time was divided by tensions between the southern and northern states concerning slavery. In 1850, the Fugitive Slave Act had been passed. It came into operation in Massachusetts, and the act required, made it mandatory for the civil authorities to be proactive in returning fugitive slaves. The law required the citizens of Boston to return the slaves, and they imposed penalties on anyone who assisted a runaway slave. This was also the time of the Mexican Wars, when the American state annexed the state of Texas. Thoreau was a lifelong opposer of slavery, and he opposed the war against Mexico. He felt that America had just gained its independence from Britain, and that when, by forcibly annexing Texas, that the government was acting as the British government had, and he opposed that. He saw it as a great injustice. So as a protest against slavery and the Mexican Wars, Thoreau refused to pay his poll tax. For this, he was arrested and put in jail. He remarked of his stay in jail that in jail he felt himself freer than the citizens who were on the outside. Luckily or unluckily for him, his stay in jail was very short-lived. He was let out the next day because someone paid his tax on his behalf. They think it was his aunt. Thoreau's book, Civil Disobedience, is his plea to others to resist government's unjust laws and unjust actions. Thoreau's resistance was his refusal to pay his poll tax. And he was willing to go to jail for this. He wasn't best pleased to have been let out the next day. The book inspired Mahatma Gandhi's first Satyagraha nonviolent protest in South Africa in 1907. And Gandhi read directly from Civil Disobedience during his campaign for Indian independence. The book inspired Martin Luther King Jr. in his campaign for nonviolence in the 1960s. It influenced Tolstoy, John F. Kennedy, W.B. Yeats, and many, many others. It's interesting, too, that Thoreau said that when he was writing Civil Disobedience, he was influenced by the Chinese philosopher Lao Tzu and by many Christians whose faith inspired them to live the example of Jesus and resist injustice. Thoreau was influenced by Lao Tzu. He in turn influenced Martin Luther King Jr. and John F. Kennedy. There's a span of over 2,500 years between when those people lived. And that's a real red flag to us. One, that there will always be the need to watch out for injustices. There will always be the need to act and to promote equality and justice for people. We, even today, need to be vigilant against injustice. We need to be active promoters of justice and to speak out and call out injustice when we see it. I read Civil Disobedience, and when you start reading it, you sort of say, well, he really didn't like the government of his time. But when you have to remind yourself that when the book was written, government was very different than governments today. Then the American government's main work was to run the army. And he felt that that's their only job, and if you are insistent on keeping an army, you're going to look for something for the army to do, hence the invasion of Texas. He said the government would be better off providing something like education for the people. And of course, that's what current governments do, for better or worse. When Thoreau refused to pay his poll tax, he did it for two very specific reasons: to oppose the invasion of Texas and to protest that America, the country which had undertaken to be a refuge of liberty, at the same time allowed 1/6 of its citizens to be enslaved. He was very specific about why he was protesting. Thoreau did pay his local tax because his local tax went to make roads, and he used the roads, and he said, I use the roads, I must pay for them. He knew why he was withholding his money. He wanted to prevent bloodshed and to stop the injustice of slavery. And he didn't stop by just paying his taxes. He harbored slaves. He engaged in organizing safe routes to get the slaves to Canada. Thoreau made an important observation about democracy as a system of government. And these things are really important. He points out that a majority in any government does not guarantee justice. Sometimes we think, well, we have a government and we're a majority and they're doing it and everything is fine. There's no guarantee of justice. Vladimir Putin has the majority vote. It doesn't guarantee justice for Russian citizens. The government of Israel has a huge majority now, and that's causing the greatest of injustice for Palestinian residents. Hitler was elected under a system of democracy and then used his majority to systematically dismantle the democratic system and then imprison the opposition. Thoreau pointed out that governments often pass laws that are unjust. And it's not something new that we need, all these things we need to be aware of. When you think of it, Socrates, Jesus, Alexei Navalny, Gandhi, Martin Luther King were each in their time convicted in public courts according to the laws of the land at the time. Thoreau points out that often politicians delay acting for justice because of the pressure from wealthy individuals and people who wish to hold on to power at all costs. We see examples of this every day in our political systems. Last week, the UK government rolled back on its carbon promises because they realise there are votes to be had in not reducing carbon and forcing changes of how we behave. Will our government succumb to pressure from 3,000 farmers affected by the reduction in permitted nitrate levels? Or will they work to redress the fact that water quality in half of our lakes, it's half of every the number of lakes we have in Ireland, it's unsatisfactory and it is polluted and it is destroying the biodiversity. You've got the pollution on one hand, you've got 3,000 protesters on the other. And while I mention farmers, we can say that about other groups as well. Governments will only act for justice and equality if there are votes in promoting justice and equality. Whether there is justice and equality in a country depends on the citizens. Politicians won't do it because it's the right thing to do. They do it because their voters want them to do it. So for a healthy democracy, we, you and I, have to be proactive. Citizens, in turn, must have access to truthful information. Truth and facts are under threat as never before. When you think of Fox News was fined about 800 million euro for misinformation, information they said that the American election had been stolen from Donald Trump, they knew that was wrong. They did not publish it because they said their listeners didn't want to hear it. Now that's really bad. The awful thing is that that fine of 800 million euro didn't even dent their budget. Didn't put a dent in the budget. Meant nothing to them. They might as well have said, stand in the corner on the bold step for 5 minutes. We in Ireland need public service broadcasting from every media source. We need people who can challenge politicians and voters with facts, not wild imaginings. The political system must not only work for wealthy individuals and groups. You know, over the summer, we learned of mismanagement at RTE. We heard it from breakfast to tea all summer long. And that does need to change. Public service broadcasting is necessary in the interests of truth and democracy. It is really vitally important that we are not being served by an organization that purports to hold, to tell the truth and to give facts to its listeners, knowing it is misinformation. Citizens must be proactive in upholding democracy. We have a duty to protest against injustice and inequality. But protests must be peaceful and public. They shouldn't be hiding behind a mask. There should never be a situation of bringing a gallows in front of a public building like that happened. And I think at a minimum, protesters should be clear about what they are protesting against or for. And it's fine, I think, if people feel justified in withholding their television license, but they do have to take the going to jail bit as well and get rid of the television. You know, when Thurl didn't pay his poll tax, he did go to jail. No point in withholding it and then carrying on as normal. Democracy has its faults, but it is the fairest system. And we know it's fragile. It's unacceptable to threaten, to harm or hurt anyone through hate speech. And that seems to be the acceptable way with these online warriors. Under Nazi leadership, Germany caused untold harm to its citizens. It allowed the intentional destruction of millions of individuals. This was done gradually with the blessing of an elected government and within the laws in force at the time. We should remember the warning. I don't know who gave this, but it said, when they came for the communist, I wasn't a communist, so I didn't protest. When they came for the Jews, I wasn't a Jew, so I didn't protest. When they came for the trade unionists, I wasn't in a union, so I didn't protest. When they came for me, there was no one left to protest. And I think the other thing we have to learn from this is to listen to people. You know, ask yourself, could I possibly be wrong? Dialogue is always better than confrontation. Amen.